going to get started. Good morning. This is the business meeting of the Judicial Council of California for October 28, 2011. The meeting's now in session. Again, some housekeeping matters. All of you are familiar with this, but it bears repeating. Our business meetings, as well as our educational meetings of the Judicial Council, are audio cast live with real-time captioning on the California Courts website. So portions of these meetings are also videotaped for later broadcast on California Court News, or more commonly known as CCN. Also, portions can be accessed on the California Courts website. So for the benefit of all, but especially to enable our online listeners to follow our discussion, I remind council members of several things. First, to speak into your microphones. Second, to address each other by name. And also to raise your hand and wait to be called upon to speak so that others may follow and know who's speaking at any given time. We also have several presenters throughout the day for our agenda items. We welcome them and will introduce them at the time their presentation is being made. Concurrent with our meeting today is the fall conference of California on My Honor. It's the civics training program for teachers. It's being held in the building. This is an outreach program. Collaboration with the California State University and the AOC. So teachers from around the state attend an intensive civics institute focused on the judicial branch. And there they gather new strategies and resource materials that they take back to their classrooms. So this is simply one of the public outreach programs we undertake to educate young Californians about the role of the courts in a free society. But the first item on our agenda, as you can see, is the swearing in of new council members. We have approximately 7 incoming members. As you know, every year about a third of the council membership turns over. This ensures continuity for council. It also creates opportunities for new participation for court leaders statewide. And all council members volunteer their service on this body and its advisory committees and task forces. They don't represent individual courts or geographic areas. They make decisions in the best interest of the branch of the court statewide and the public we serve. Many of the new members have observed previous council sessions and also have had the orientation to the rules and procedures. And I will invite each of the new members to join me at the head of the boardroom for the oath. These are Judge David D'Alba, Superior Court of California, County of Sacramento. Judge Terry Jackson, Superior Court of California, County of San Francisco. She has been a member. She was an advisory member, appointed to a voting member this term. Presiding Judge David Rosenberg, Superior Court of California, County of Yolo. Judge David Rubin, Superior Court of California, County of San Diego. Ms. Angela Davis, Assistant U.S. Attorney, U.S. Attorney's Office for the Central District, located in Los Angeles. Mr. Mark Robinson, Attorney at Law, Robinson, Calcagni, Robinson, Shapiro, Davis, Incorporated. And Mr. David Yamasaki, Court Executive Officer, Superior Court of California, County of Santa Clara. If you come on up, I will administer the oath of office.
With a wide-angle lens.
What are you saying about me?
Closer?
Maybe in two rounds.
Okay. Well, I'll administer the oath, and then we'll take a picture.
Yeah. Okay.
You coming? And then Philip will arrange it. Please raise your right hand. Repeat after me. I do solemnly swear or affirm. That I will support and defend. The Constitution of the United States. The Constitution of the State of California. Against all enemies, foreign and domestic. That I will bear true faith and allegiance. To the Constitution of the United States. And the Constitution of the State of California. That I take this obligation freely. Without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion. And that I will well and faithfully. Discharge the duties upon which I'm about to.
Discharge the duties upon which I am about to enter.
Thank you for your service. Congratulations.
So can you use that fire when you wall in there as a background? We know who you are.
Oh, my security card.
Move over this a little bit more, but you're against the white wall. Okay. We're going to do two in case somebody blinks. Okay. We're going to do it on three. One, two, three.
You did it on two.
One, and two, and three. Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you. There are memento booklets at your things for you.
Each
other.
That's good. I like it. I'm happy with that.
You need to get a new camera. Tiny little thing.
Up here. Now you
In our agenda, this is also the opportunity now for the public comment period. I have been notified that we have not received any requests to speak for our public comment period. We also have an opportunity to receive written comments, and we have, as you see, written comments received for today's business meeting from Presiding Judge Steve White, affiliation with Superior Court of California, County of Sacramento. And as you can see, his topic for his written comments were the impact of the proposed rules, forms, and standards on the Superior Court of California for the County of Sacramento and other counties. And you have that written material. I also understand that in addition to the minutes that need to be, we need to approve two sets of minutes, the July 22nd set of minutes, as well as the September 9, 2011 business meeting minutes, as well as, from what I can see, also the August 26. So we have three sets of minutes, August 26, September 9, and then the former earlier one from the summer, July 22nd. If council's had a member had an opportunity to review the minutes, do I hear a motion?
They have a...
The August minutes were not fine for today's meeting. We will prepare them in the next week and
okay.
Offer them to you. Approval by circulating order.
So we are only then looking at July 22nd and September 9. Mm-hmm. Thank you. I had Judge So moved approval. I heard a second from Judge Waters. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Minutes are approved. This is also the opportunity for the chair to deliver a report of activities and events from the last meeting. And so let me first point out the obvious, that seated to my right is a familiar face but in a new position. Effective September 10, and with the retirement of Bill Vickery, Ron Overholt became the interim administrative director of the courts and secretary to the Judicial Council. Ron himself, as many of you know, was a council member, served on many committees when he was the executive officer for the Superior Court of Alameda County. He joined the AOC as deputy administrative director in 2000, and we're fortunate to have him in this interim position as the council conducts a comprehensive executive search before naming the new administrative director. Ron will be giving the council an update on the status later of the state budget as part of his report as the administrative director. So since our early September meeting, I've continued to travel around the state to meet with judges, bar leaders, and community groups. I'll mention a few. The Supreme Court held a special oral argument session at Hastings on September 7 as part of its outreach to law students, and we were especially proud of that session because it was held in the Justice Marvin and Jane Baxter Appellate Law Center at Hastings. Also at the invitation of judges at the court in San Joaquin, I attended the Consuelo Callahan Inn of Court at Humphreys Law School in Stockton on September 8th, named after Ninth Circuit Federal Judge Consuelo Callahan. Also, several hundred assigned judges met in Sacramento on September 21 and 22 for their annual conference. I was happy to deliver the luncheon address and speak with them and hear their comments and concerns about this invaluable program to courts. I also had the opportunity to tour and speak with judges and court staff in Santa Cruz and Fresno, as well as at the Courts of Appeal in the 5th and 6th districts. Among the bar events I attended were the Civil Justice Association of California Dinner, the San Mateo County Bar Association Diversity Forum, the State Bar Foundation Scholarship Reception for law students interested in public law careers, the San Francisco Defense Association Luncheon, the Santa Cruz Monterey Bar Reception, the Women Lawyers of Alameda County Dinner, the St. Thomas More Society at Santa Clara University Dinner, the Fresno County Women Lawyers, and the Fresno County Bar Association Annual Justice Pauline Hansen Dinner, the Unity Bar Association of Sacramento Annual Awards Dinner. Earlier this week on Tuesday, I was honored to give the 2011 Bernard Witkin Lecture presented by the L.A. County Bar Association at the invitation of the L.A. County Bar, Justice Norman Epstein, as also Justice Ashman Gerst, who's here part of counsel. There are two other events I'd like to mention. I delivered the third annual Chief Justice Ronald M. George Distinguished Lecture and participated in a panel discussion with justices from around the country. That was a program sponsored by Golden Gate University School of Law, and it was moderated by Justice Joan Dempsey Klein. And last month in Long Beach, I had the pleasure of attending the annual meeting of the State Bar and CJA Conference. Among the many events there, I delivered the keynote address at the California Women Lawyers Dinner. I gave my first annual address to the State Bar and had the delight to participate in a conversation with the chief as arranged by the California Judges Association. And also with CJA, I attended the breakfast where Justice Miller, Judge Herman, Judge Yu, Judge Rosenberg participated in a panel discussion moderated by Judge Rubin. At all of these events, I see many of you Judicial Council members participating, actively involved in community, often responsible for the invitation to bring me to your county. And so I thank you for your outreach there as well, because I know with the work you do during the day, your work here, your work on task force, and then attending these, it's all very meaningful and important that you're out there, and it doesn't go unnoticed. I can also report, as many of you may know, that the Supreme Court now has a full complement of justices. The commission met on August 31st to confirm Governor Brown's appointment of Goodwin Liu to the court. Professor and now Justice Liu was rated as exceptionally well qualified, and he fills the seat vacated by the retirement of Justice Carlos Moreno. And as an interesting fact, between then and September, the court called on over 40 appellate justices to sit pro tem on cases. I thank all of them for their service. And lastly, before I end my report, while on the subject of service, earlier this month we received bittersweet news, and that is that our counsel colleague, Judge Bert Pines, announced his intention to retire from the bench at the end of the year. The council will meet at least one more time before then, and we'll have that opportunity to thank Judge Pines for his service. But, Bert, your retirement is a loss to the court in Los Angeles and to judicial counsel and court statewide. And I know that we'll talk about it next month, but or in 2 months, but we will miss your wisdom and your tough questions.
But we
congratulate you on your decision, and we know that you will still be around to assist the state
in any way
possible.
I've mentioned that. I'm not going to be gone from the scene. I'll be around. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Judge Pines. That concludes my report. At this point, I would turn it over to our Interim Administrative Director's report, Ron Overholt.
Thank you, Chief Justice. And I just begin with indicating how pleased I am and what an honor it is to be able to serve in this position. I appreciate the trust and confidence that you have in me to serve as Interim Director. And I would echo the comments about Judge Pines. It was a surprising phone call that I received while I was sitting in the Oakland airport. Judge Pines called me and told me of his plans to retire, and I told him the same thing, Chief, that those would be big shoes to fill and that we would truly miss him.
Well, thank you.
Wish him the best. So you have a written report from me at your place that you can read at your leisure. I won't go over all of the items that are in writing. You can read those. I would indicate with me taking the role of interim administrative director, that how pleased I am that Christine Patton, who's at our table, was willing to step up and serve as interim chief deputy director. Chris has been with us for the last 9 years as the regional administrative director for the Bay Area North Coastal region, and formerly was with the Santa Cruz Superior Court and served in that court as the executive officer for many years. So her experience on the ground in the trial courts has really served her well in the regional administrative director position, and will serve her well as the chief deputy. So thank you, Chris, for your willingness to step up. I want to just give you a little information about what's happening within the administrative office of the courts. Of course, like all of the courts, we're faced with serious budget reductions. We took a budget reduction of 12% in the AOC, which is $13 million, which was a sizable amount to be able to deal with that. So it resulted in a hiring freeze that continues, except for urgent positions that need to be filled. Of course, with the exit of Stephen Nash as our finance director, we needed a finance director, and so we were fortunate to find Zlatko Theodorovich to be able to come in and serve in that position. So that is one of very, very few hires that we have done as a result of folks exiting the AOC. AOC has continued, as have the Supreme Court employees and the appellate court employees, to be furloughed one day a month. We've had furloughs now for 3 full years, and that is continuing. AOC, Court of Appeal, and Supreme Court employees have had no COLAs for the last 4 years, no cost of living adjustments. We've had a number of retirements, as you can see from the number of folks that have interim before their title, a number of retirements. In addition to that, we have instituted a voluntary separation incentive program, similar to what was done in the Orange County Superior Court and several other courts, to encourage folks who would like to exit the AOC to be able to do so. We had about 48, I think, staff indicate an interest in doing so. And the criteria for approving those was that we needed to not have to fill behind those positions so that we would have the salary savings from having those vacant positions. So not all of those 48 were able to actually be approved for that, but we will have over 30 AOC employees leaving employment with us. And I can tell you, while, you know, as compared to layoffs, I think that is a far superior way to be able to have a reduction in staff. However, when I look at the list of AOC employees who opted for that, it is painful to see the talent that is leaving here and the reduction. It will enable us to meet our budget reductions, however, in the process. So other activities, we've done a number of restructuring within the AOC. One significant one is to combine two of our divisions into one. Chad Finke, who's sitting in the audience, has stepped up, as have a number of AOC employees, to lead two divisions instead of the one that he had before. With the retirement of Ken Kahn. So we have two divisions now called the Court Programs and Services Division. It combines the Executive Office Programs Division and the Trial and Appellate Court unit that Chad had previously. I'm also announcing today that effective Tuesday, we will combine the three regional administrative director positions into one. Jody Patel will be the regional administrative director for all three regions. And so she will continue to be located in Sacramento as her base, but she will be responsible for all three divisions. Margie Borhan Miller and Althea Lowe Thomas will be her assistant directors and will be located in the Southern Regional Office and the Bay Area North Coastal region. So we're consolidating those, eliminating two director positions in addition to the Ken Kahn director position that we eliminated when he retired. So we're actively reorganizing and shrinking executive leadership at the AOC. Just my activities, I think I've been to most of the appearances that the chief has been to. Not all of them. I couldn't keep up with her. But I have been in the process of trying to visit as many courts as I can in the process since, I think, April. I've been making appointments to visit courts with no agenda other than to find out what's going on in those courts, what are the issues that are there, what are the problems, either budget or otherwise, and to indicate what my plans are and any assistance that we can provide. So we've been to 25 or so at this point. I think the next one is Santa Clara on November 10th. There will be a full judges meeting, and I'll be there to speak with that court. The chief mentioned the state budget, and it's very, very early in the process. We had a positive meeting, I think, with the director of finance at the end of September and discussed with her our general approach going forward, that we believe we need to establish a base budget on behalf of the courts, that we can't continue to be in sort of a general slide or reduction, that we need to, that we believe we've reached the edge of the cliff, as I described it, that we can't take further cuts, and as a matter of fact, that we need some restoration of our general fund contribution in order to be able to perform our constitutional mandates. We've also talked about a general approach that would include potential revenue, potential fees, possibly a permanent redirection of some of the statewide funds that are there, whether that's the facilities funds or other funds, but to find funding that would enable the courts to be able to establish a base budget that essentially works, assuming the $300 million offset that was provided on a one-time basis this year. The director of finance was receptive. You know, it's a little early to be optimistic. She was, I would say, less pessimistic than former finance directors at this time of year. And the uncertainty in the state budget is certainly still there, and so it's early. We wanted to be able to have that conversation with her early, and so meeting in September is earlier than we would normally begin that discussion. However, given the severity of the budget situation with the courts and the concerns that courts have with the need to plan for next year, whatever it's going to bring, we wanted to begin the conversation early as she is beginning to develop the outline of the budget that she's going to provide to the governor that he will release the second week in January. So we felt that it was important to have. She indicated to us that there were concerns about the trigger that is built into the budget, that if a level of revenues don't come into the state, that they would need to pull triggers that would add additional cuts to various areas of state government. There was concern that those would be difficult and that the courts would be at risk of seeing further reductions. She indicated no, the triggers are already established and the courts have already had their cuts. The last $150 million reduction that we had at the end of June was the equivalent of our trigger, and it's already been pulled. So that was positive news. She also indicated there are no plans currently, and it's still very early, to sweep construction funds, as was done this year. So we'll continue to advocate on behalf of the facilities and the trial courts in terms of having those funds available for new construction. And finally, on the issue of facilities, we had very good news this past week. Bonds were sold for two of our projects, the 1732 projects, that will build the courthouses in Calaveras County and San Benito County. The part of the good news was the interest rate on those bonds was, I think, 4.8%, which was very low, much lower than was projected. So that will, you know, result in a very positive outcome in terms of savings, in terms of paying off the debt service on those bonds. We have three more projects where the bonds will be sold at the beginning of November, and those bonds will build San Bernardino, Riverside, Mid-County, and Tulare County courthouses. So that's very positive movement in terms of the progress. And finally, that on the facilities front, that Justice Brad Hill, chair of the Port Facilities Working Group, met for 2 days last week, had very productive meetings. You'll be receiving a report from Justice Hill and his committee at your December meeting, but they are very actively looking at ways to be more efficient, reduce scope of some of the buildings that are planned, and to be as accountable as possible and as efficient as possible in terms of the facilities program that's underway now. That concludes my report, Chief.
Thank you. Any questions?
I don't have a question, but I wanted to thank Ron for sending out the weekly or biweekly or whatever reports of things that are happening to keep us updated between meetings.
Then we'll hear from Justice Baxter on the Policy Coordination and Liaison Committee.
Thank you, Chief. With the September 9th close of the 2011-12 legislative session, the meeting schedule of the Policy Committee has relaxed somewhat since my last report to the Council. The Policy Committee has met three times since that last Council meeting. And on September 2nd, the committee met to consider recent amendments to AB 1403 that related to Vordaer. These amendments were based on the work of a subcommittee of the Council's Civil and Small Claims Advisory Committee, resulting in the bill that ultimately was signed into law. And at its September 14th meeting, updates on the budget and legislative priorities were given and discussed. Yesterday's meeting was our annual in-person meeting because, as you know, all of our other meetings are by conference call because of the rapid pace of bills within the legislative arena. So at yesterday's meeting, we provided an orientation for the new policy committee members on the operations of the policy committee, and we reviewed and made recommendations for Judicial Council sponsored legislation and legislative priorities, and those matters will be discussed and presented to the full council at the December meeting. So stay tuned for that. I would like to welcome our new policy committee members. Judge Pines assures me that receiving notice of membership on the policy committee had absolutely nothing to do with his prompt retirement. Welcome, Judge Pines, as well as Judge Robert Moss.
It'll be a short assignment.
I heard that you had promised the appointment secretary that you would serve longer than that. welcome also to Judge Robert Moss, Judge Marianne O'Malley, Judge David Rubin, Angela Davis, Mark Robinson, and Kim Turner. And welcome back those members who had served previously on the policy committee. At yesterday's policy committee meeting, the committee considered recommendations for the council's key legislative priorities for the 2012 session. And some of these are very familiar to you. They're continuing legislative priority items. They relate to securing sufficient funding in the budget, improving efficiency, new judgeships, ratifying the authority to convert certain vacant subordinate judicial officer positions to judgeships, and continuing to advocate to oppose Assembly Bill 1208. The committee also reviewed two proposals for Judicial Council-sponsored legislation that came up through the Advisory Committee and public comment process. The proposals that will be presented to the Council for sponsorship at the December meeting relate to cleanup of statutes concerning discovery of electronically stored information and notice to creditors of decedents' estates. For your information, this legislative year, the governor signed 924 regular session bills and vetoed 128. The vast majority of the Judicial Council-sponsored proposals were enacted this year, with one bill vetoed. That was Senate Bill 503, which would have allowed JRS 2 members who previously served as subordinate judicial officers to purchase a fraction of their JRS 2 service credit and not simply be limited to all of their SJO years. The bill was vetoed along with all other pension-related bills because the governor says that he wants to address pension reform in a comprehensive manner, and I'm sure we'll be hearing more about that based on what occurred yesterday. The legislature will reconvene on January 4th for the second year of the 2011-12 two-year session. And I will be bringing you up to date throughout the session on Judicial Council-sponsored bills, budget issues, and bills of interest to the branch. So if you do have any questions, either Kurt or I, or perhaps, I don't know if Donna's here, we'd be happy to respond to any questions you might have.
Judge Pines.
Yeah, if you don't mind, I did have a question of Mr. Overholt that I just wanted to go back to something he said. And I appreciate what's been going on at the AOC and the reductions that have occurred. And I know many divisions of the AOC are strained right now because of these reductions. We all see that and appreciate that. There was an article recently that caused some concern. And I wanted to ask you about it, Ron, consistent with my practice of asking questions.
See, I just said how much we were going to miss you.
But I just called your attention to this. There was this article recently that in response to a request from Judge Kevin McCormick that he was advised that the administrative office is employing 110 temporary staff from Apple One Temporary Agency, and there's costs here as much as $216,000 a year. Could you clarify what's going on here and what the response is?
Sure. That's a fair question. We do have a number of temporary staff. Apple One is the agency that we contract with to provide temporary staff services. I think about 25 of those staff are or were testers. In other words, most of them are former court staff, trial court staff, who were testing the CCMS product. So those will be gone with the testing drawing to an end. So that's one large number. The other largest number of temporary staff that we have are in our facilities unit, where we transferred 533 buildings into the AOC's responsibility for maintenance and operation in December of 2009. Most of them, the bulk of those, transferred in December of 2009 at a time when we were not hiring, but we still needed to be able to maintain those buildings as they came over. We could not just not maintain them. So as much as Lee Willoughby pleaded with me to hire staff, we didn't hire staff, but we did bring in temporary staff for the maintenance and operation, but also for all of the construction projects that are underway. There's 51 facilities under progress of being planned or actually built. So a large number of the staff that are project managers and are overseeing the construction that are for a project that has a beginning and an end, that it was appropriate to have temporary staff to be able to provide those services. And the other, there are a number of staff, sprinkling of temporary folks providing services in the other divisions where people have left, and it's essential that we have a secretary in a division or a staff person in a position. So, and I would just say that in government and in business, temporary employees are a part of the workforce as a common practice. So it's not unusual to see temporary employees in the workforce. But it's a fair question. We do employ temporary employees.
Any additional questions? Then I will turn this over to Justice Miller, Chair of the Executive and Planning Committee.
Thank you, Chief. I, too, wanted to indicate that I will miss Bert on the council, and especially, though, the friendship that we have developed over this last little time and the lengthy discussions we have in between council meetings. But also, it's kind of nice to know that assignment to the E&P Committee isn't the only assigned committee that causes retirements. and in somewhat of a response to the question that you just asked, we had planned to have a governance issue discussion that E&P had set for this particular education meeting concerning the AOC, staffing levels, employments, and things of that nature, which would have included the temporary employee issue, but we had to deal with the CCMS issue, so we're going to hopefully have that in December if nothing intervenes. So I think that a lot of the issues and questions in that vein will...
I'll save them for December then.
Okay. Maybe we'll put it in January. I don't know. The previous council meeting on September 9th was a special session, and the agenda did not include the presentation of the internal chair's committee's reports. Therefore, since the last regularly scheduled business meeting on August 26, E&P has met 11 times, 4 times by email and 7 times by telephone. In the course of those meetings, the committee set the agenda for the council's special session on September 9th and for the October 27th and 28th educational and business meeting. The committee also during this time has dealt with a number of other council issues and business aspects. The committee received an update on the process and progress of the judicial branch operational plan for 2012 through 2015. AOC staff briefed the committee on the status, the timeline, and next steps of the process for completing the plan. If anyone is interested in more additional information on that, we'll provide that to you. But just as a way of background, the judicial branch develops its strategic plan goals at 6-year intervals. It develops its operational plan at 3-year intervals. The strategic plan describes long-range missions and goals for the state court system. The operational plan sets forth specific objectives and desired outcomes for achieving the goals outlined in the strategic plan. The Executive and Planning Committee is responsible for setting the planning agenda and overseeing the process outside of the council meetings. The Judicial Council provided initial guidance on the development of the next branch operational plan at its annual meeting, annual planning meeting on June 22nd and 24th of this year. Just a couple of items regarding recent progress. Two working groups have been formed, the Judicial Officers Operational Planning Working Group and the Court Administrators God, you know, this is like all of these terms, you know. Court Administrators Operational Planning Working Group. Each will provide comments regarding judicial branch trends, assess the branch's performance according to the existing operational plan, and provide input into the data collection methodology. They will comment in the development of the 2012 and 2015 plan and review the plan prior to the June 2012 Judicial Council meeting. The two groups, particularly the Judicial Officers Operational Planning Working Group, we utilized our new Judge David Rosenberg from the PJs Association, had him invite a number of PJs to volunteer. We also have included Court Programs and Services Director Chad Finke in that process, and he has invited a number of justices to serve on that. Judge Ellsworth from Riverside, PJ of Riverside, is the chair, and Judge Becton is the vice chair. We have 13 members on that working group. With regards to the Court Administrators Operational Planning Working Group, Kim Turner and Alan Carlson invited court executives to participate, and also Chad Finke invited clerk administrators. We don't have a chair yet, so if anyone wants to volunteer, and we have 11 members on that particular group. We're also going to discuss this with other stakeholders from the Judicial Council Advisory Committees and from AOC leadership. We will also contact subject matter experts with regards to particular information to provide us the technical information about trends impacting the judicial branch. During these last couple of months, E&P has also reviewed the progress of our governance initiatives, and we have discussed and clarified several aspects of that. The E&P committee has directed AOC staff to schedule a preliminary review by E&P of the 2008 Judicial Council governance policy that was set forth in 2008. It's on a three-year cycle also, and so we're going to be looking at the formal council governance policies to see if we need to make any changes or additions. The committee also directed AOC staff to publicize email addresses for the Judicial Council, not you individually, but as a whole, and an E&P central email box so that in future branch communications with regards to issues of branch-wide interest, they can email us. It will go to a central location, and then we can distribute that to the appropriate place. That was one of the suggestions at the CJA meeting. So thank you, President Rubin, and with regards to that. The committee also reviewed and approved two programs that we have talked about a number of times, Judicial Council Member Liaisons to the Trial Court, and also the Judicial Council Liaisons to the AOC Divisions, and we will be sending you a Zoomerang email here fairly soon to ask you for your preference as to which court or division that you would like to be assigned to. We can't guarantee you will receive the one you asked for, but we will consider that and we will make those assignments and hopefully have those programs fully operational by our December meeting. The committee also acted on behalf of the Judicial Council to approve 12 retirement resolutions. The committee also made recommendations to the Chief Justice on the nominees for her appointment of the Judicial Branch Representative on the California Interagency Council on Veterans. And then I did want to also mention, based upon information that we and many other members of the branch and also those in state government in California yesterday received with regards to the governor's proposal on pensions, and that we as a council have made the appropriate assignment of that issue to Ron Overholt and also to Kurt Child, and that we will be working on that particular issue. We also intend to work closely with CJA and deal with that together in that regards. And then also something that we talked about yesterday, one of the Executive and Planning Committee's responsibilities is to establish agendas for council meetings. Sometimes the agenda items include reports to the council that are required by prior council action. For example, reporting back to the council about the progress of certain programs, such as what was done yesterday and today concerning CCMS, or reports that are required by the rules adopted by the council. In that latter category is the report that the council will receive at our December meeting about the rule of court the council adopted effective January 2010 concerning public access to judicial administrative records, which is embodied in Rule 10.500, which the council adopted pursuant to statutory mandate. The rule requires the council to review and evaluate how the rule has been implemented since its adoption, including the number of requests received, the time necessary to respond, and other pertinent information. We expect to have a report about Rule 10.500 on our December council agenda. It is especially important, I believe, in these times of reduced judicial branch resources for the council to understand the impact of the rules the council adopts. We do understand that in an effort to promote transparency, our AOC staff have been responding to nearly all of the requests made under this particular rule, even where those requests ask for information or responses that go beyond the scope of the rule. With regard to Rule 10.500 implementation from this day going forward, the council has directed staff to comply strictly with the requirements of the rule and not to go beyond the requirements as set forth in the rule. We understand, and what we will ask for when this is returned to us is that they make a recommendation with regards to the appropriate standards that should be followed, that guidance be given to staff with regards to responding to that particular information, the scope of the rule, how and when to respond, all in the hopes of balancing the branch's commitment to appropriate transparency, necessary confidentiality, and the realities of resource availability, all in the end attempting to meet the best needs of the court. So that will be a report that we will have presented to us at our December meeting. And, Chief, that is the report from ENP.
Thank you, Justice Miller. Any questions? I did want to point out to commend counsel and ENP in acting so quickly yesterday after finding out of the governor's announcement on pension reform, and also how timely it is since JRWIG, the Judicial Retention and Recruitment Working Group, will be meeting on Tuesday as well. That'll be very important news that we will be hearing back at our next available meeting, with post-its in the meantime on the website and in emails regarding the status of that, I don't know what it is yet, legislation or initiative. At this time, then, I turn the matter over for a report from our chair of Rules and Projects Committee, Justice Hull.
Very well. Thank you, Chief. Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to start by noting also that I heard with regret that Judge Pines was going to retire at the end of the year. I think the easiest way for me to comment on my regard for his wisdom and abilities is to remind you how I attempted yesterday afternoon to elevate him to the appellate court. I wish it would have been more successful. But in any event, Bert will have the opportunity in December to mark this better. But we thank you for your service, and you will be missed on the council, believe me. Chief, the Rules and Projects Committee has met once in person and five times by telephone since the August 26th council meeting. RUPRO met in person on September 9th, by telephone on September 13th and September 30th, and by telephone on October 6th and October 13th, and communicated by email on September 27th and October 18th to review 56 proposals for new and amended rules and forms, and one proposal for amended ethics standards for neutral arbitrators. I personally was also able to attend the Northern California Regional Administrative Office of the Courts meeting held on September 28th in Sacramento, and had the opportunity to speak to the Northern California Trial Court presiding judges and court executive officers on that occasion. Referring again, though, to the 56 proposals, in reviewing them, RUPRO was concerned about and seriously considered the difficult fiscal and operational challenges facing the judicial branch at this time. In response to concerns raised by trial courts to limit the number of rules and forms, asking for a moratorium on new rules and forms, which unfortunately, for reasons that I will refer to momentarily, we're not able to fully implement. But in light of the times in which we are serving, RUPRO prioritized the 56 rules and forms proposals. although all of the proposals presented to RuPro were worthy, RuPro has recommended adoption of only 27 rules and forms proposals today. The 27 proposals on the Council's consent agenda for which RuPro recommends Council approval with either an effective date of January 1, 2012 or an immediate effective date meet the following criteria. Number one, they are statutorily required to be adopted or approved by January 1, 2012. Number two, they are needed because of statutory changes. Or number three, they are required by case law. An additional five proposals for which RuPro recommends Council approval with an effective date of January 1, 2012 are expected to come before the Council at the December 13th meeting. These proposals meet the following criteria. Number one, they are necessary or useful to implement a statute. Number two, they are needed to adapt to and reflect current practices or to correct an identified problem that requires urgent solution. Or three, they are otherwise urgent or necessary for cost savings and efficiency. RuPro will recommend that the remaining proposals be considered by the Council at meeting dates in 2012 and have effective dates of either July 1, 2012 or January 1, 2013 to allow the courts more time to prepare for and implement any necessary changes. Following these decisions, I communicated with presiding judges and court executives by email to inform them of RuPro's actions and to continue a dialogue about the rulemaking process and the impact of that process and current rules requirements on the courts, and to assure them that we did the best we could to limit these rules proposals that come before you today to those that had to be implemented by statute or case decision or through the other criteria that I refer to. I received positive feedback in response to these actions by RuPro, and I look forward to hearing more from presiding judges and court executives about their concerns and suggestions for improvement. I also intend to meet with administrative presiding justices on this subject at an upcoming meeting and hope also to hear from appellate court clerk administrators. In addition to meeting to review rules and forms items proposed to go to the Council today, new RuPro members were also attended an orientation by telephone on September 21st, and RuPro members communicated by email on October 19th to approve circulation for comment on a special cycle of a proposal that would implement legislation that was signed on October the 9th. Chief, I'd like to end my comments first by commending the advisory committee chairs that we met with concerning all of these proposals on their understanding and their flexibility during these difficult financial times. I also would like to make note of a few of the proposals before the Council today. Item A13 is a proposal from the Criminal Law Advisory Committee for two rules and a form to facilitate post-release community supervision revocation procedures under recently enacted criminal justice realignment legislation. The Criminal Law Advisory Committee worked swiftly to propose these amendments to assist the courts in implementing the new law. Item A24 is a proposal from the Family and Juvenile Law Advisory Committee for rules and forms to implement Assembly Bill 12, the California Fostering Connections to Success Act, as amended by Assembly Bill 212. AB 12 and AB 212 extend juvenile court jurisdiction and foster care services to dependents and wards up to the age of 21 years. The legislation makes it possible to access federal funding for foster care services for dependents and wards beyond their 18th birthday, which will provide them with the time and support needed to gradually become fully independent adults. RuPro considered whether this item should be discussed by the Council because it is quite lengthy and imposes additional workload demands on the courts, but concluded that the additional workload demands are once again a result of the changes required by legislation, and therefore it was not necessary to propose that this item be discussed more thoroughly by the Council today. Four items, item A15, A17, A18, and A21, are joint proposals from the Family and Juvenile Law Advisory Committee and the Elkins Family Law Implementation Task Force, which assist in implementing legislation that resulted from the final recommendations of the Elkins Family Law Task Force. Included among those proposals is item A15, which proposes a rule of court to establish procedures for the examination of a child witness in family law proceedings under amended Family Code Section 3042. This is a challenging and important area for family law courts handling complex child custody cases. The proposed rule reflects a great deal of consideration as to how to best support these courts as they make the decisions responsive to the best interests of the children. Before I do conclude my report, Chief, I'd like to thank and commend Deborah Brown, Susan McMullen, Patrick O'Donnell, and Camilla Kyliger for their excellent support of the Rules and Project Committee and the rest of the RuPro staff during this very labor-intensive and important rule cycle. Chief, that concludes my report. If there are questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
Any questions? Judge D'Alba.
Chief, I just have a comment. Justice Hall mentioned that he was at the AOC Northern Regional meeting last September, where he offered a presentation about RuPro and its rules and functions. I just wanted to note that in response to your encouragement that Judicial Council members be present at local or regional functions, there were five members of the Judicial Council present at that meeting, Judge Baker, Judge Rosenberg, of course, Justice Hall, Judge Kaufman, myself. Judge Rosenberg moderated an excellent breakout session with presiding justices and assistant presiding justices, and where there was a fabulous dialogue about issues that concern judges and presiding judges in that region. There were 31 courts represented, and as I recall, approximately 90 CEOs, presiding justices, and PJs present.
Thank you for sharing that information. Thank you. Next, we'll hear from Judge Herman regarding the status of a report for the CCMS Internal Committee.
Thank you, Chief. I will defer, of course, substantive discussion until our agenda item later this morning. The CCMS Internal Committee has met three times since the last meeting of the Judicial Council. Once was a full-day session where we were thoroughly briefed by the Executive Committee as well as Program Management Office staff on, first of all, the outcome of the external and independent testing external audit that was done that was presented to the Council yesterday in terms of the results. We were also briefed on several different alternatives to bring back to the Council in terms of how we would proceed forward with CCMS in relation to the Council's directive to us at the last meeting. The full-day meeting was substantive and informational in terms of providing information to the internal committee. Thereafter, we met two more times by telephone, once to bring us up to speed on several additional alternatives which have been presented to the Council by way of our written report, as well as to get additional background information from our own financial folks on some of the numbers that are involved with the CCMS project overall. Justice Ashman Gerst and I attended a meeting on October 5th with representatives from Dr. Soon-Shung's group, as well as with Dr. Soon-Shung. During that meeting, we also met with representatives of the State Bar, and we will discuss that again later in our substantive presentation later this morning. In addition, as chair, I met every week by telephone with Deloitte, where Deloitte briefed Justice Berniers and myself, as well as staff, on what the progress was in terms of CCMS and the final acceptance of CCMS as a product, which we are on the threshold of completing at this time. Also, as chair, frequent interaction with the CCMS Executive Committee. I attended on behalf of the Internal Committee all of the meetings of the Executive Committee to be briefed in terms of the progress of CCMS. And in terms of what the committee has been up to, that would conclude my presentation. And again, we'll revisit CCMS later this morning.
Thank you, Judge Herman. Any questions for his report? Thank you. We have our consent agenda items, A1 through A27 and B through F, as described previously by Justice Hull from RuPro. And I understand that there has been no request by a Judicial Council member to remove that from consent agenda. So those matters all pass. That takes us next.